This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. As we approach Halloween next month, houses may start to fill up with decorative spider webs and spiders. What about the real spiders? A new international report says there's a lot we get wrong about spiders in our daily lives and in the news media. We have a Wisconsin spider expert with us to help separate fact from fiction. Michael Draney is a professor in biology at UW Green Bay. His specialties include the ecology of spiders. Mike, welcome back to Central Time.
Yeah, how's it going, Rob?
Good. Well, before we get to the fact or fiction thing, I don't know if you know this, Mike. We had you on years ago to talk about what spiders do in the winter. You know that. What you may not know is for years after that, every year around this time, our web article about that would show up on the charts. Like, people kept finding that again. People are really curious about that. Can you remind us, as it gets colder, what do spiders do for the winter?
Yeah. First of all, I have to say why people get so interested, and I think it's because a lot of web-spinning spiders are reproducing this time of year, and so they keep getting bigger and bigger until around Halloween. But they also put their webs higher and higher up in the landscape. And so by Halloween, there's big spiders right in your face. So anyway, how do they get through the winter? Obviously, they're not going to be migrating like birds, so they all are surviving the winter somehow right here in Wisconsin. Amazingly, all the ones we've looked at survive as spiders. That is, the eggs don't overwinter. The eggs actually will freeze during the winter. So even the ones that survive in an egg sac, they actually, the little eggs will embryonate and the little baby spiders will hatch out of their eggs, but stay in the egg sac and just hang out there as little baby spiders until the weather is right.
Okay, now I saw, the reason we gave you a call this time is I saw this big international report, spider researchers from like, I think 20 countries looked in the media and they like tracked down things that were wrong that people were saying about spiders. As somebody who studies spiders yourself, do you see a lot of kind of misinformation or misunderstandings of spiders?
Oh, absolutely. There's no question about that. That's a big part of my job, is to reassure people and make sure that spiders are not on their top 10 or even top 100 list of things to worry about.
Yeah, one of the interesting things in this study was the places where they have the most dangerous spiders, like Australia, they're pretty calm about it. It's places like, you know, the UK and some places here in the United States, too, where we don't have a lot of dangerous venomous spiders that the media tends to freak out more. Why do you think that is?
That's been my experience too. I grew up in New Mexico, and I could find 50 black widows in my backyard in New Mexico. And yet here, if you find a black widow, you know, it's a news story. And so I think that's what it is. It's unfamiliarity makes people kind of nervous and worry about things. And I think the more you know about these animals, the less you realize you have to fear from them.
Now, a common misunderstanding, again, according to these international researchers, is a lot of people will show up at a doctor thinking they have a spider bite, and it probably isn't. And I got to admit to you, I have been that person in my life. Mm-hmm. Spider bites apparently are way less common than we think they are.
Yes, absolutely. I think in general, you have to compare them to wasp stings, right? Has anyone ever asked you, hey, is this little red mark a wasp sting? No, because, you know, you look down and there's a wasp stinging you and it really hurts. And that's essentially the way it is for most spider bites, too. You will know if you get bitten by a spider because you will see a spider biting you. And so you don't have to wonder if you see a little red mark. That is very unlikely to be a spider bite. And there's so many other things that it could be. But spiders just get the blame.
Now, we heard on Facebook from Jimmy, who writes, the three things that scare people most are spiders, snakes, and bats. Now, Jimmy has a theory. Jimmy says this is because they have one thing in common: unpredictable movement. Other creatures are predictable. Most likely, they'll simply run in a straight line away from a person. These three don't. They're kind of all over the place. So what do you think of that theory of scary creatures?
Yeah, he might be onto something. I think there's something about spiders being kind of sneaky, and you often don't notice them until suddenly you do. And so there's that. I think the number of legs, you know, the legginess of spiders, I think is very, you know, very deeply negative to some people. So it's kind of hard to say what it is, but there's definitely, it's about us. It's not about them. It's a psychological issue, and not so much an issue of them being dangerous to us at all.
Now, this is a pretty common part of human psychology, being scared of spiders, yet you are, Mike, somebody who's devoted your life in part to studying spiders. What is it that captured your attention and your imagination?
You know, I think seeing them under the microscope had a huge impact on me, because they really are amazing looking. I would say they're really beautiful looking, but essentially it's like some kind of a tiger or something, but the only reason why they're not in zoos everywhere is because they're so small. And so they really are a fascinating group. They use silk as a technology to accomplish almost all of their problems, to solve, you know, solutions to all their problems. And so in some sense, they're almost more interesting than a tiger or a lion because they've got this sort of unfair tool that they use, silk that they use to make webs and do all sorts of other things with as well.
How do they do that? How do they produce? I mean, silk production, it took humans a long time and we had to use the natural world to do it ourselves, really. How do spiders do it?
It is amazing. We've learned what genes the spider uses to make the silk, and we can get bacteria to synthesize the silk, but the silk does not make a spider web then. It just makes this gloppy stuff. And so it's how it comes out of the spider's abdomen, out of the spinnerets, and how it gets kind of combed by the spider's legs that produces the alignment of molecules, and it produces this incredible tensile strength and elasticity, which really exceeds any man-made material. So that's the way they make it. And so they can do something that we can't do, quite frankly.
Talking to Michael Draney, biology professor at UW Green Bay, looking at spiders, facts and fiction about them. You can share your thoughts or questions, or maybe your love of spiders or fear thereof, on the Ideas Network Facebook page. On Facebook, Brandy writes, "I like spiders a lot, and I try not to kill them. If they're where I don't like, then I catch and release. My husband thinks it's dumb, but hey," Brandy says, "they eat mosquitoes, so they're cool in my book." Mike, how about, do spiders eat a lot in the way of mosquitoes in Wisconsin?
Yeah, absolutely. It's been estimated that around the world, the weight of the insects that spiders consume every year, it exceeds the weight of humans living on the planet at that time. So they make a massive difference in the kinds of insects and the amount of insects that you find, not just in Wisconsin, but all around the world.
Now, what are some of the most common kinds of spiders we see around the state? I don't know that I could tell them apart, really, but what are our most common spiders here?
Yeah, it's interesting. The most common ones and the ones that people see the most are not really the same, right? Because in order to be conspicuous, they have to live by us and they have to be large. So people are very familiar with wolf spiders. They're hairy and kind of earth tones and they run around. People are familiar with jumping spiders. They live on our houses and they jump around. But there's a lot of tiny spiders that live in leaf litter that there's twice as many species of those. There's over 100 species of sheet web spiders that live in Wisconsin, and yet few people have ever really seen one. So those are kind of two different questions. But yeah, a lot of the big web spinners are becoming adults right now, and those are the ones that people notice around Halloween.
Right, and not all spiders spin webs. Do I have that right?
That is right. Yeah, all spiders make silk. And a lot of them use their silk to wrap their eggs in. They use silk as a little drag line, so in case they fall, they don't fall all the way to the ground. So they do all sorts of things with silk. You've probably heard they balloon. They can travel long distances as babies, especially using silk lines. But webs is just one thing that they've evolved to use this amazing material for.
Are there more rare spiders that you're always too happy to hear a report of in the state?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Everyone's always saying, "Oh, you study spiders. You can come to my house and there's a million of them in my basement." But, you know, of course, those are the ones that are very common. And there's oftentimes they're not even native to the state. They've been moved here and they like our houses because they're sort of like a cave, right? A cave in the tropics or a cave in the Middle East or something. So those are not the spiders that particularly make me happy. It's the spiders that live in rare habitats in Wisconsin, old growth forests, unusual wetlands. Those unusual habitats are going to have unusual denizens, including spiders. And sometimes we find spiders that we've never found in Wisconsin before. Not that they're new species necessarily, but they're maybe more common in Canada or maybe more common down south. And those are the ones that really make me excited to find.
We've talked about eating mosquitoes a bit. Can you talk about the role of spiders in these ecosystems you're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, they are definitely predators. That's what all spiders are doing. They're eating different spiders will eat different kinds of insects, and they're not all out there, you know, just trying to help us, right? I mean, clearly we're not really part of their world. They're eating insects to survive and to do what they do. But not only are they eating insects, they are food for all sorts of other animals, right? Including a lot of animals that we really appreciate. Great example are songbirds. So we always talk about how songbirds are eating caterpillars, and that's true. They feed their babies caterpillars, even if they eat seeds. But most of those songbirds will switch from caterpillars to spiders for about a week during the nesting of their babies. And it's at a time when the brain is growing. And the reason is because spiders have more of an amino acid called taurine in their bodies than caterpillars do. And this taurine is really important for brain development. So it's kind of like brain food for birds. And so these spiders actually, by feeding spiders to baby birds, the baby birds grow up more inquisitive and braver, more curious, and more intelligent.
Now, one thing that I used to think I got corrected on, I think at an early age, spiders are not insects. Who are they most closely related to? Who are the closest cousins in the animal world to the spiders?
Yeah, so spiders are arachnids, and these are animals that don't have jaws. They have either fangs or pincers for their mouth parts. And some of the close arachnids that live in Wisconsin, we have the mites and ticks, not everybody's favorite animal, but ticks are arachnids. We've also got the daddy long legs, which actually are not spiders. They don't have any silk. And then we also have farther south, not in Wisconsin, all sorts of scorpions, wind scorpions, and sort of related animals that live, especially in drier parts of the world and in the tropics as well.
Mike, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you so much.
That's Michael Draney, professor in biology at UW Green Bay. His specialties include spiders. He joined us to separate fact from fiction in the spider world. A recent international report finds a lot of us, even in the media, get it wrong when it comes to spiders. Keep sharing your maybe sightings, pictures if you got them, on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Now it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Member Drive. Rachel Vasquez joins me. Your gift right now is super important at the end of this hour because gifts from people like you are the biggest source of funding for WPR programs. Central Time and all the stuff you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio are all possible thanks to your support. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We've got 6 minutes left in this hour. The time is really ticking down, and we are looking for 9 more people to join in. When you give, you fund Central Time and all of the WPR programs that you count on. So give right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Just had a great conversation about spiders here in Wisconsin with a Wisconsin spider expert, a separated fact from fiction, learned some fascinating stuff about them, a glimpse into the world of science and some of the creatures we share this state with. These are the kind of interesting conversations you can count on here on Central Time.
That's right. We cannot talk about spiders without your help. WPR is listener supported, and that means that your donation at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 makes all of the topics that you tune in for possible. Choose whatever amount works for you and then make your gift.
And this fall member drive, WPR has you covered with fall sock season. Today, you can get 2 pairs of WPR socks when you give $15 a month or more for the programs you value. I guess if you're a spider, do that twice. You want to end up with 8 socks. These golden navy socks celebrate all the great content you get access to on air and online every day. Only today now can you do this double deal, 2 pairs of socks for $15 a month or more. Make it happen at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
I wake up to Wisconsin Public Radio. The alarm goes off. It's better than a snooze alarm for me because I get to hear a lot of interesting things, especially in the car. If it's not public radio, I'll turn on some golden oldies for a while, but then you heard the same song 75,000 times, you get tired of it. Maybe try some country western, but mostly I keep going back to public radio because there's always new stuff. I'm John Ink from Wausau, Wisconsin, and I listen to Wisconsin Public Radio, and it is my source for a clear view of the world.
You can join him at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 to make your donation this fall member drive. It's Central Time. Rob Ferret here with Rachel Vasquez. The WPR programs you enjoy are possible thanks to your support. Your contribution of $10 a month, $100 a month, whatever amount you choose, keeps radio coming to you and your community on into the future.
If you've already made an annual contribution or you make ongoing monthly gifts as a sustainer, thank you so much. You really are the backbone of WPR.
If you haven't given yet, join the tens of thousands of dedicated WPR members when you donate at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio is your station, the one that wakes you up in the morning, rides with you on your commute, keeps you company during the day.
The beauty of WPR is that you get to decide how much to pay for the programs and services you enjoy. A lot of first-time donors will give, you know, $50 or $100 or maybe do a monthly thing like $5 or $10 a month. You pick the amount that's right for you.
Whatever amount works for you, your gift, along with the donations from other listeners, add up to WPR's largest source of funding. Join the team right now. Make your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Clock's ticking on your chance to get that double sock deal, two pairs of socks when you give $15 a month or more. These are socks with a WPR design. They'll show your love of public radio. Give now, get the socks at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And if you're a sustaining member, thank you so much. Think about making today the day that you increase your support of WPR, maybe $5 or $10 a month, really whatever amount works with your budget at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Carol in Hudson says, WPR, I can't live without it. And Margaret in Kenosha also gave. Margaret says, I'm donating because I simply enjoy WPR. Thank you so much, Margaret. Thank you, Carol. I hope they can encourage you now to make your own gift because you count on Wisconsin Public Radio. Give at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
We have so many people to thank. Thank you to our sustainers, our members who renew by mail. Thank you to our business sponsors. We appreciate the support from everyone. It all adds up to make the Ideas Network possible.
Give now. Show your support for the conversations you count on. Know that we really do count on you to help make it all possible. Make your gift right now. It really is just going to take a few minutes of your day. WPR.org is the website or call 888-202-2552 and thank you.